Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 448, Trick, Not Treat, Taking Games. Happy Halloween, everyone. And we'd like to thank our Patreon backers, especially our new producer, Carrie. Thanks, my friend. You rock. All right, everyone. Welcome to a new episode and an episode which, again, we're celebrating a happy Halloween, and nothing's better when it comes to Halloween than board games, right? That's typically the thing that, right?
That's what I think. Uh-huh, my daughter, though, made us, she didn't make me. She encouraged me to make cobweb-shaped waffles and a pumpkin cake for dinner. Uh-huh. So we had a nice Halloween-themed dinner, and then, of course, trick-or-treating and whatever party we were supposed to take her. I don't know. She's a big Halloween kid. So
excellent.
I don't think board games are on her radar yet, but I'm getting her there. Hey, all this costume stuff is fun and all, but instead of playing soccer in a skeleton costume, maybe we stay home and play Skull King.
Oh, spoilers. I mean, you should just take her to the house that gives out board games.
I'm giving out cards.
Are you really?
Yeah, they have those little Halloween packs of Pokemon cards.
Oh, that's excellent.
I tracked them down at Target. That's what we're giving out this year.
Nice. I think Munchkin did that one year. Like a couple years back, they had Halloween giveaway packs too.
Oh, I love that.
So smart.
I think a lot of kids would be like, just give me the candy. But I don't care. I'm going to be the cool house.
I don't know. If I think back about all of the Halloweens that I trick-or-treated as a kid, the ones that are most memorable is not the candy. It was always like the oddity. It was like comic books. Or a can of soda way back in the day, you know, or like just, or like the toys. Like every once in a while you get something that like someone was like, here's a toy thing. And you're like, oh, I got a toy, you know, and
I got a plastic pirate sword from my house once when I was 6 years old. I had that for like 5 years until it broke. And I took it with me trick or treating like two or three times.
That's
and
great.
It didn't matter what I was dressed as. I was like, this year I'm Ken Griffey Jr. with a pirate sword.
There you go.
Like,
excellent. Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. It's a great holiday, especially for the kids. Obviously, over the time, they've shrunk the candy bars, which is cruel and unusual, treatment for children. Yeah. Fun time, fun size stuff is not really fun. I don't know.
No.
So, if you happen to have some extra games lying around, drop one in a kid's bag and just blow their mind. And just like, like Anthony just said, like you will just be immortalized in that child adult mind forever. Like, I think
you imagine like a little 7 year old just lugging around a copy of Ticket to Ride. Like, this is my Halloween game. It goes with me everywhere.
Yeah, I think you have to worry about like what happens after you drop that game. Like, how many more kids you get, or the parent going, seriously, Ticket to Ride? Seriously, like,
yeah,
he's seven. And you're like, it's fine. He'll get used to it. He's fine.
Yeah. I've gotten that look before at birthday parties when you get like, because the kid doesn't give the other kid a game. I give that kid a game, or my wife does.
Sure.
And so we'll get them a game. And then the parents look at you like, I have to play this now.
You're like, uh-huh.
I have to learn it and play it with my kids. I'm like, yeah, you're welcome.
You just gave me an activity. Thanks.
Fun.
Like, we don't have enough things to do, but yeah, no, I think you certainly should make it a memorable Halloween for everybody out there. And a lot of us out there will get board games to the table. So if you're having a great Halloween party, you already have those episodes from us. We've done those episodes, right, Anthony?
Yeah, we have.
A lot of those episodes.
Like, every year we think of something, so there must be like 8 or 9 of them.
But this year, even better than the Halloween games, is the best part of Halloween. It's not the treats, it's the tricks that you play on each other. And again, of course, trick-taking games, right? Because, like,
heck yeah.
If you're having a Halloween party, say we're playing trick-taking games, and they're like, oh, that is so cool. I'm like, yes, yes, we did.
And you know what? Like, 4 of these could be also Halloween games. Yes. So, you know, but we're not far off.
No, and again, trick-taking games are an excellent, excellent game to play with, like, non-gamers or gateway gamers. Mm-hmm. Because they probably know some of the very basic concepts, and they're also very easy to teach. So, this will be an excellent list of, and I think, fairly inexpensive games to pick up and get to the table.
Yeah, yeah. Most of these are in print, and if they're not, they are soon to be, and they're all, like, less than $20.
Yeah.
Except, like, a couple of weird outliers that shouldn't cost that much.
So give tricks, not treats, this Halloween. That's what we're saying.
Heck yeah.
Oh, my lawyer says we can't say that, Anthony.
Okay.
Yeah. Give trick-taking games. There you go.
We're not allowed to be clever because people might take it the wrong way. Come on.
Look, we got the lawyers for a reason, right?
And it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because you almost got us in trouble.
That's true. It's not the first time that's happened. So our staff is listening and waiting by and throwing some flags. So we're cool. So that's what's going to be our feature review. So stick with us because, again, whether you're a big fan of trick-taking games or never heard of the thing, I think Anthony has an excellent list because he was a convert at some point. He became a trick-taking legend.
Yeah. Yeah. The first, like, 2 or 3 trick-taking games I played, I hated. So I thought it was a terrible genre of games. Turns out those were terrible games. There's a lot of really good ones. So
I was talk about that. I was very, very close to putting Chronicle on this list, Anthony. And then I was like,
I would have burned it all down. We would have just, like, logged off when we got there. Like, and Anthony's off the podcast. Okay.
If you want to
finish it on your own.
There's no more disappointed man on the planet when he's playing a board game than Anthony when he's playing Chronicle, and like on his turn he can't do anything at all, nothing, and you just look at him, he's like, looks at the hand, just like gestures up and like, come on.
honestly any game, but that game in particular, it happened to me, and this is not a lie, I'm not making this up. We played a full game and I didn't once get a meaningful action in the entire game.
Absolutely.
Full round. So I'm like, to be there, what people. Are we doing? Why does this exist? I hate this.
Good times. All right, so we'll be tricking a little bit later, but Anthony, there's a lot of stuff that's going on out there in the board game industry, tabletop. I guess one of the little things I want to talk about that was an announcement, but again, it's one of many announcements that Magic the Gathering, I guess they decided that they're going to take the amazing Magic that Richard Garfield had put together and just blow it out with every IP possible. And this time, there's a new one.
Yeah, they just keep bringing out new stuff. I don't know. And it's like 2 years off, isn't it?
Yeah. I think this is for shareholders.
Oh, right. I forgot that's what they're doing. They're trying to make money all the
time. Yeah, they're not trying to make a better game. They're just like, more money.
Yeah. Ugh, gross.
And they made more money. It was reported in the Financial Times that they made a bit of money, of course, with the Lord of the Rings. I think they would have made a lot more if the ring was not found so quickly.
Right. Yeah, that was funny. I bought a lot of those, actually. I hadn't bought Magic cards since, 2013, because that was before I met you.
Mm-hmm.
My son was very young, and I was like, Margaret, I got to get out of the house. Like, I've been in the house for like 8 months. I'm losing my mind. I got to get out of the house. I'll try Magic. And I didn't think of board games being a thing. And so I went to a couple of game nights. I bought a few cards. I was like, oh, I hate this. Okay. I'm not a fan of any of this.
Yeah.
And then thankfully I found you all, and I was like, oh, board games are much better and they're cheaper.
That's
and
right.
Also, you people don't want to kill me.
Yes.
For wasting your time.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. But anywho, new Magic. After I did spend a fair amount on Lord of the Rings, we're getting Marvel stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's not an IP I've heard a lot about.
Nothing. No. It's
whoa. Out of
it's not on the decline at all.
No.
So I don't know.
It's a good time to pick it up.
Yeah, so there's a lot of other stuff coming out. Like, the Doctor Who stuff either just came out or is about to come out. They announced Fallout is coming, mm-hmm. like the video game series. Final Fantasy-themed cards are coming.
Crazy.
Assassin's Creed is coming.
Crazy.
This will be bigger than all of those.
Yes.
Probably bigger than Lord of the Rings, I think. Mm. Because you're going to get a lot of kids who just see
Spider-Man.
The magic logo, which they roughly remember, and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
On the shelf at Target, and they're gonna be like, I need that. And yes. They're going to buy them. And they're going to be $8 a pack, and their parents are going to be like, what the actual hell? But they're going to have to buy it. So
this is weird, because Lorcana is out, and Disney owns Marvel. I'm surprised I'm surprised they're allowing this to happen. I mean, obviously they are. They're going to make money off of it, but why not do a Marvel-Lorcana set then?
You know what it is, though, is I don't think Lorcana thinks it's a competitor for Magic.
Okay.
And it never will be. Like, it, even if it gets that big, it's a different audience of people. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they care.
Okay.
I think they're like, we could hit both at the same time, and let's hold off on the Marvel-Lorcana stuff for like 5 years, and sure. We'll drop that in the future. I don't know. I think they're okay.
I'm worried about Disney. This is what I'm saying.
You're worried about Disney?
Well, I guess they're selling ESPN, right? That came out recently that they're dropping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. ESPN's been losing them a lot of money, though. So I can see that.
Well, it made them money at one point, a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think of the 2010. So now not so much for reasons. Now, if they would include Magic the Gathering in ESPN, which they had done back in the day. Remember they had all those ESPN channels?
I know. Yeah.
They had Magic the Gathering on ESPN.
Well, get a Dune Imperium on there with Mr. Beast.
Oh, yeah.
That would probably solve the whole problem right there.
So. I know two broadcasters who have actually covered games in real time. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
We're pretty good at it.
We're really good at it.
We'll put it out there. So here's what we do. Just spitballing. We're workshopping this.
Uh-huh.
We'll contact Mr. Beast.
Yeah.
And then we'll contact ESPN.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we'll contact the head of Disney.
Yes.
For the heck of it.
Sure, sure.
And, you know.
Just make it happen.
Step A, step P, step B, some things will happen. Step C, profit.
Profit. Yeah. Seems simple. Yeah. I don't know why anyone hasn't done that yet.
No one's thought of it.
Done. This is not live, right? You'll edit this out, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely going to edit things.
Okay. Yeah, so Magic is becoming, I guess Magic's going multiverse. I guess that's probably the best way mm-hmm. to say it. So hold on, because if your favorite intellectual property has not been Magic-fied at this point, it will be. Because
It's Fortnite, but cards.
Yes.
That's what it is now.
100%. It'll be fun in the future to figure out, like, which of these multiple versions actually, like, is the thing. I don't know if it'll implode at some point, but it's got to, right? Like, at some point, like, you can't support everything.
I feel like what happens is people buy and collect the one they like. Like, I bought a bunch of Lord of the Rings cards.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with what I bought. I've organized them. I built a couple decks. It's cool. I have not bought any other Magic cards.
Sure.
It didn't convert me to the brand. I was just like, I know I like the Magic system. I played it a bunch 20 years ago. I like Lord of the Rings, and there's no good card game for that, so I'll buy this. I know I'm not most people who need to buy everything, but...
Sure. Well, if you would have found that one ring card, everything would have been a little different.
Yeah. Well, we wouldn't be here, I'll tell you what.
Well, that's what's happening with Magic. As everyone's, again, your friendly local game store is just going to become more consumed by another multiverse product of CCGs out there. So hold on, people. Hold your table space as long as you can.
Heck yeah.
Speaking of table space, just a bit of an update. We've been talking about this for several weeks now. The big tabletop charity game event is happening in Fanwood, New Jersey, and this is an event to support Troop 6000. It's a Girl Scout troop of young ladies, leaders, that are part of the shelter system in New York City. A good number of them will be coming out to Fanwood, New Jersey to game with us, to learn about tabletop gaming, for us to honor them and their experience and their leaderships in their troop. And hopefully kind of get them involved in all the cool stuff that we're doing, because games are educational, fun, inspirational, And we just want to get as many people to the table as possible. So again, thank you all for your support. If you happen to be in the area, we would love to see you. There's going to be buying and trading and selling of games. There's a lot of donations of games where you'll be able to raffles. And of course, there's just a lot of games, a lot of food, a lot of fun, a lot of people. And Anthony and I will be there. Jen will be there. A whole bunch of people will be there that you've heard on the podcast before. And just a great day. So thank you again. Check out more information on BoardGamersAnonymous.com over in the events section. You'll see a flyer there. If you're on meetup.com, Board Gamers New Jersey is kind of hosting that event. And again, we'll see you soon.
Yeah, awesome.
All right, Anthony, you have something for us, because not only is the big charity event coming this Saturday, but there's another convention, surprisingly enough, happening.
I know. This one always sneaks up on me, which is funny because I live here. I literally go by the convention center twice a week on the bus. But PAX Unplugged is coming up in a month from tomorrow when you're listening to this. So we're getting psyched up. We're getting ready for this. And we've actually partnered up with PAX and are giving away 5 badges for PAX Unplugged. So these are 3-day badges. They're worth $85. They've been kind enough to offer 5 of them for our listeners. And it's really easy to enter the contest. All you have to do is head over to the Facebook page. It's also posted on Twitter. I refuse to call it X. Sorry. Stupid. Elon Musk is stupid. So if you head over to the Facebook page, facebook.com/BoardGamersAnonymous, it is pinned there at the top, and you'll see badge giveaway. Join us at PAX Unplugged. Click through the link that's there, and you will be able to enter in a number of ways. So some of the ways you can enter are joining the Discord server, which we've recently opened up to the public from Patreon backers, from popular demand from everybody involved. Following us on Spotify, checking out the Patreon. You do not have to give us any money. Just check it out. See what we're offering over there. Subscribing to the podcast on Apple, visiting the YouTube page. And then, of course, if you follow PAX on any of their social media as well, it gets you extra entries. So hop in there, check it out. If you are in the area or feel like traveling in a month and joining us in Philadelphia, you can enter here. And then we're going to pick winners at the end of this week, because we need to get the badges off to you soon. So get in there by Friday. I'm going to pick winners. I'm going to send everything off on Saturday. We're going to put up the announcement. And then PAX will be in touch with you probably the following week with information to get your badges. So look forward to seeing everybody there. If you're already going to be there, make sure you check in with us and we'll connect. If you are entering the contest, if you win the contest especially, let us know and we'll hook up then as well.
Absolutely. And again, PAX Unplugged is great. It's just great. It's a great convention. Philadelphia is a great city. It's hard to say, right? Because again, the convention is just one part of it. The city is so much a player. So Indianapolis, Columbus, Ohio, the other conventions we've been to up in Boston and such. Philly's great. You know, the convention ends and after hours, there's so much good stuff to do. It's such a good time, and the city's such a great host. So hopefully you can all get down and again check out all the contests. So we want to get you on board. All right, Anthony, that's everything that's happening with us. Let's talk about what our friends are talking about. What's our question of the week?
All right, question of the week this week is, what game is sneaky in its complexity, offering a lot more depth or barriers than you'd expect based on the artwork, presentation, or publisher? So basically, what games are simple at first glance, but actually have a lot going on under the surface? Drew over on the Patreon says Sprawlopolis, 15 cards played one at a time, but rapidly begins to break. 100% on board with this. This is the one I thought of when I wrote the question, because I play this game all the time, and every time I play it, I'm like, wow, this is hard. how did they make this so hard with 15 cards? So yeah, that's a great one. If you haven't played it, if you like that kind of thing, definitely go for that. Over on the Facebook page, we had a few more answers. We had Tim say Creature Comforts, which looks totally like a kid's game, but it's definitely more complex to play than it seems. Not difficult to play, but gateway plus. You could also say Root looks a bit more family friendly than it is.
Sure.
Root for sure. I've had my kids ask to play that when they see it on the shelf. I'm like, no. Maybe Jack, maybe, if you don't want to get super mad about it. But yeah, there's a lot going on there. Larry says Santiago is a classic example of this. Can't really tell how good it is from the art. Uriel says, that would be the definition of Beyond the Sun. The rules could fit on a bus ticket if you have really small handwriting. but the game is deceptively deep thanks to the huge tech tree and the unique systems to control and colonize. That is a good one. I can teach that game in like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
But there's a lot going on there.
Of course.
Darren says Lord of the Rings LCG, period. So I think any LCG kind of fits the bill. Relatively simple rule set, but then they kind of unpack and develop themselves over time. Roman gives us a nice little list here. We got Arboretum, Hanabi, The Crew, usually card games.
Sure.
Agreed.
Yes.
Kevin mentions, hey, that's my fish.
Ooh.
Looks so cute and it's easy to learn, but when you start playing, .. it's like a knife fight in a telephone booth between chess and Go.
I love
and
it.
Both games have rabies. Like, okay, Kevin. That is a good one, though, because when I bring that one into the classroom, students are like, wow, this is mean. I'm like, yeah, it is. It's fun, though, right? They're like, yeah, it's such a cute little penguin. I'm like, yeah, you're going to hate each other. So yeah, and a couple more answers here. Chris Rodriguez, friend of the show, we talked about this earlier, mentions Root and Oath both, as well as Fort. So really anything from Leader Games.
Like, sure.
They always go find cute artwork, and then the game is just like, hitting you upside the head with a 2x4. So, yeah, lots of good stuff. It's a funny thing. There's a common, like, DNA among, like, these. It's artwork first can kind of trick you a little bit.
Sure.
But then also, like, the form factor of the game. Like, smaller card games, when they're really dense, can be surprising, I think.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, there's a lot. And I wonder about that process, because you mentioned Root and a lot of those games that are based on the coin series. Like, that's a gamble. Right? Because like you said, with your kids, like, you and your kids are two separate quadrants, audiences and such, and like, if I put this out, kids are going to think it's for them, adults are going to be like, eh, I don't know if I want to play a thing with cute little cuddly creatures, and yeah, it's just like, I don't know, like, it works, I give them credit.
My daughter is still literally counting down to when she can play.
Aww. Like,
she has one of the stuffies. She won the art contest in their last Kickstarter for her age group. So, like, she drew a little thing based on one of the card backs. She sent it in. They sent her a stuffy. So she's obsessed with that whenever she sees it on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, when can I play that? I'm like, eh, a couple more years. We're getting there. You're not 6 anymore, but you're still not 12. So
sure.
We're getting there. But yeah, it's they're fun, I think, unless you trick somebody too bad, which I have done.
Yeah. I mean, I think that generally happens a lot. I think people do take, you know, judge a book by its cover, which is not incredibly wrong when it comes to board games, but it's a thing. It's certainly a thing out there. I know playing Small World definitely seems like cute and cuddly and simple, and it's a Days of Wonder game, and you're like, oh, we're wiping out other populations. Just like, yeah, kind of. They're going into decline, quote unquote. Yeah, that's kind of rough. I mean, I think that's the one that I often, like, you can play this. And then after a while, I was like, ugh, maybe you can't play this.
Yeah.
And that's even some of the Target games, too, like Jaws of the Lion or the Spirit Island version that's in Target. Like, those are still pretty tough games. Those are not, you know, like, child versions of things.
I always wonder about that. Like, what poor family picked up the Spirit Island Horizons game?
Yeah.
And they sat down to play that with like 9 and 10 year olds. I'm like, that was not a good night. No one had fun there.
That's great. All right. Well, again, thank you all for participating. It means a lot to us. Definitely hit us up on all the social medias. And if you can, hit us up with a review. It means a lot for the algorithm to get more gaming out there. And there's so much stuff going out there in the world right now. People could use a good time. So thanks again for getting those games out there. All right, Anthony, so that's everything that's happened to our friends out there. Let's talk about the games that we want at the table. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders.
All right, so mine is one of the games in the new AllPlay Kickstarter. And so AllPlay, formerly BoardGameTables.com, when they launch a Kickstarter for games, they usually have 3 games at a time, which I get, and it seems to work for them. But then often I'm like, I don't really feel the need to buy all of them just for the sake of buying them all anymore. Mm-hmm. I was certainly there in the past, but now I'm just like, can I just get the one and give me the discount instead of like wrapping up the discount in all 3?
No, you got to buy all 3.
I don't want all 3.
That's so, how it works now.
Yeah. But one of the 3 this time around is a reprint of Through the Desert, which is a Reiner Knizia classic, which I love. and it goes into and out of print like every 10 minutes. So this is a game that originally came out in 1998, and it is a game where you're building caravans of camels to cross the desert. And it's got some like Go-like elements to it. You have like a big wide map and you're building your caravan, and you can enclose spaces to like block them off, and people have to cut each other off. And it becomes like incredibly cutthroat because it is essentially like area control, but with these lines as you move. So you're playing like four player Go on a small map, which is brutal. And I've had a lot of fun with this because it's abstract. It's an abstract game. It's Reiner Knizia. But it does it in such a way where you always feel engaged with one another, right? Like somebody takes an action and you know you're three people away. You're like, oh my gosh, if you both do this next thing, I'm so, right? Like you positioning yourself and maneuvering and trying not to let other people know what direction you're moving and how you're moving. It's so difficult and it's so fun when it works. So I love this game. I have a copy of the Z-Man Euro Classics Edition, which was when Asmodee briefly took the licenses that Fantasy Flight was holding and gave it to Z-Man, and then they stopped doing that. So mine's out of print now, too. And it's pretty. It's a perfectly pretty version of the game. But this one is even nicer, right? So you get this beautiful, like, dark desert sky artwork, lots of great little miniature camels with riders on them. And it comes with an expansion, the Bazaar expansion, with four different modules. I don't know if this existed before. I don't have it, I don't think, with my version. I always like the game as is. I don't know that I would play with the expansions, but it's always cool to have more stuff, right? It's just a very tight game. Every action you take is super important. There's no like build up or any of that. You get in there and you're immediately engaging with one another. So if you've never played Through the Desert, or if you have and didn't know it was back in print, check this one out. Because it's one of those like old school classics from like 25 years ago that holds up really well. I haven't played it in like a year or two, but I did play it plenty amongst all of our other big heavy games. And it is a good one. It's one of Reiner Knizia's better games, in my opinion.
Mm.
And I'm glad it's finally coming back. I don't know anything about the other two. I didn't really look into them. I'm not interested. And if you look at their backer count, it's 115 for one of them, 75 for the other, and 595 for Through the Desert.
yeah.
That said, there's 1,100 people getting all three. So
sure.
It is what it is, right? You get all the discounts. But well worth checking out. And it's like $39, which is super good. Like this is a game that another company could have easily picked up and sold for 60 or 70. And I would have said that's dumb, but they would have done it and people would have bought it. So 39 is amazing.
I think I played this. I think back in the day. Yeah, oh, no, funny. I remember having looked at the board here. Now, obviously, this is a super upgraded version. There's a lot of plastic here, and it looks really nice. They did a really good job here, so I appreciate like they went all out. Like you mentioned, the price point here.
Yeah.
Reiner Knizia is he's known for his. I mean, the guy's a genius on all levels, but his games are abstract as all get out, and historically his games have been I won't say bland but as
they're abstract
as yeah but even abstract I mean I think he gives his the art and the art design production I think his abstracts are at a whole different level of just mute I think that's probably because you know you look at Reiner Knizia game like oh okay I know what that is this production's next level I mean it's great just
I mean, it seems to be the thing now. Like, we got Amon-Ra, we got Ra. Like, those both got huge, massive, just some of the prettiest games I own now are those two games.
Sure.
Now we get Through the Desert. So, like, they're all coming back. We're getting them. Like, they're all getting that Kickstarter treatment. And if they're cheap like this, like, I'm all about it. Like, if you wanted $100 for this game, I would say, nope, go away. But 39, I'm actually tempted, even though I already have a copy.
Sure. All right. Yeah, no, something to check out. And on the next episode of our Patreon back kick in the habit, I will talk about that game and the others as well.
Cool.
And try not to back it. I will try. Please.
Sorry. I at least have one copy, no matter what.
All right. There
I
you
already,
go.
Already have one.
Well, again, trying not to buy games. This is a game that I hovered and hovered around for quite some time because, again, we just talked about this. it's cute and adorable as all get out. Like, I think right now, as far as what's coming out now, it's the cutest, most adorable game. It's been out before. It's Keep the Heroes Out Boss Battles. It's currently on Kickstarter. Make Your Dungeon Toasty and the Heroes Extra Crispy in this cooperative dungeon defense game. This has been out previously for the base set. I did not back it because, again, money, and that's the only reason. And since then, I started at Gen Con, and I was like, oh, it's here. Oh my god, it's as adorable as all get out. Like, all the different monstrous creatures are a little bit adorable, I don't know, chibi kind of things. It's like kind of root creatures as far as like the art style on the wooden meeples. The thing I couldn't wrap my brain around, because I read around a lot of reviews, watched some videos, and it says like it kind of overstays its welcome. It's just kind of too long from a co-op. It's kind of random. And then I keep looking at the cute little critters and I'm like, but they're cute and they're critters. And I want to play the imps or the red dragon or the slimes because it's awesome. So I am constantly fighting not backing this, because I know everyone has said across the board, too long, too random, but it looks awesome. This time they add boss battles, of course. It's the expansion that goes along with this. So not only are you setting up traps and having your characters mess with the heroes as they come in, now you're also dealing with a particular boss monster and trying to defeat the boss monster, but also trying to recruit the boss monster to your side. It looks cool. It's a looker. Let's just say it's a looker. Everything, the artwork, the tiles, it's a good price. They did have a, you know, one of those kind of early bird kind of things, which I'm not a fan. Just not a fan.
Yeah.
Because I always feel bad. Like, oh, if I don't back it, you know, within this 24-hour or 48-hour, 72-hour period, I'm not going to get the thing. And, like, that doesn't feel good when it comes to a game that you have not played, because you do want to take some time to figure out if it's something that you want to do. You could pick the base game up online or at the store. This has more things. I don't know if more things are better, but they look better. So that's the problem with Kickstarter. It looks better. So, yeah, check it out. It's Keep the Heroes Out Boss Battles. You can pick up the expansion for $45. The base game is still $60. Together, it's $105. Yeah. And if you want to get all of the extra expansions material, unicorns, Cthulhus, and stuff like that, then it's $180. And I would have to do the $180. And I can't. Yeah. So Keep the Heroes Out Boss Battles.
Yeah, I remember you talking about this one before. Yeah. The slimes are still cute.
They're cute.
That's all I have to say. I don't know anything else about the game, but the Ratkin and the slimes, I would just take those meeples. If you just sell me the meeples, I would put them on the shelf and I'd be happy.
That's true. There should be a backer level for just the meeples, because that would certainly be something I would pick up and put into other games. Because, like, you have skeletons, you have monsters. These are classic D&D characters. So if you ran an RPG, you could use these on your board. So instead of like spending like hundreds of dollars on these wonderful painted miniatures, just little wooden meeple guys. Like, that'd be good. I mean, maybe they should look at that. You know, put together some RPG stuff, man. That's all I'm saying.
I'd be all about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are our acquisition disorders. Again, as I mentioned, I will be doing Kickin' Habit this week, where I talk about 12 plus games, give or take, and try not to back them each and every week. So
Yeah. Listen
to my struggles live on Patreon as I look at the cute, adorable meeples, and dear God, try not to push the button where I pay on the stuff on the credit card for a game that I won't see for probably about 2 years, and then at that point, maybe it's okay? I don't know. I suffer so you can enjoy Schadenfreude, the podcast. I'm just saying. That's what it is, people.
And we've gone philosophical, so.
Well, you know, we went plaid before, so.
Yeah.
All right, so that's everything that we want to hit our table. Anthony, let's talk about the games that did hit our table. And one hit big. You got one upcoming review. You let us know if the game's a buy and you should run out and pick it up because it's a cute and adorable game. If those games are a play and you should sit down and just chill and enjoy the game, know if it's good. If those games are a dodge and then you should just avoid them for many, many reasons. Or if the game happens to be a dreaded burn and you should just torch it at all costs because it's Halloween and that's what you do on Halloween. So, Anthony, what do you have up for this week?
All right. So I want to talk about one of the hot games from Gen Con that we were not able to pick up because they sold out before we got there. And that is World Wonders. This finally hit retail broadly, which, just a reminder, if people freak out at Gen Con, it has been less than 2 months since Gen Con, and this game is now available. So don't go on eBay. Don't spend stupid money. So World Wonders is the second game from Z Mendes, who previously designed Brazil Imperial, which famously was a game we were so incredibly hyped for years. And it finally came out. And at least for me, it was a bit of meh, right? So I was like on the fence with this game. I love the look of it. I like Civ games and I like polyominoes. Mm-hmm. And this is both of those things. So I was like, ooh, World Wonder seems like a game that's perfect for me personally. Anthony Chatfield.
I know that guy.
Yeah. So I pre-ordered it and it showed up last week and I've had a chance to play it a few times. And I'll just say up front, I'm kind of glad I didn't pick it up at Gen Con and use up the capacity in my luggage for this game. So let me run through how it works real quick. On your turn, you have up to 7 gold that you can spend. Right. And so there are different polyomino tiles ranging in size from 3 squares up to, I think, I don't know, 8 or 9 squares. And you can buy one for between 2 and 5 gold. Right. Once you hit 7 gold, you are done for the round. Unless you take a loan, you can only ever have 1 loan. And that lets you spend up to 9. A loan is worth -2 points if you don't pay it back. You can't take multiple loans, though. So I'm not really sure what the point of a loan is, because everybody's going to take at least 1 loan in the game. And then all of it comes out in the wash. It's a weird mechanic. So you take those tiles, you place them, and when you place them, you have to place them either next to another building of the same type. They're all color coded. I don't know what they do because it doesn't really matter. It's all just colors and symbols. Like, nothing's really thematic here because you're not actually gaining resources or doing anything with those resources. You're just increasing production of certain things, which represent different other things. There's like food and like stone, something else. I don't remember. It doesn't actually matter. And so when you hit certain thresholds on the production levels with those things like 3, 6, 9, 11, 12, 13, then your population goes up and you're trying to get your population as high as you can because then you get extra points. And the population track is a timer. So if somebody gets to the end of the population track, the game will end early. They won't necessarily win, but the game will end early because they hit the end. Otherwise, the game goes for 10 rounds. Which you might be thinking, like, oh, 10 actions. No, not 10 actions, 10 rounds. Because in a round, you can buy as much as you're able to up to the 7 gold that you have. And that could be anywhere between 2 and 5 actions, depending on what you do. Because you can buy roads, which only cost 1. You can buy towers, which cost 2. Or you can buy one of the buildings. And you can also buy wonders. And this is the thing everybody's excited about, because the wonders are these big, chunky wonder meeples, effectively, right? It comes with 20 of these things. These are actually very cool. They're amazing. And this is the reason everybody wants the game, because it's like this 3D component added to the table. It reminded me of Tapestry with like all the 3D stuff in the box. And you're like, that's cool, right? And you can buy those if you hit the certain criteria. When you buy a wonder, though, that is the last action of your round, no matter how much gold you have left. So they just cost the rest of your gold. So ideally what you do is you spend up to 6 and you spend your last 1 to buy a wonder, but someone else could buy it out from under you if it's something that you're both qualified to buy. So sometimes you might want to end your round a little early, but there's always multiple wonders to choose from and they're not particularly hard to meet the criteria for. In any given round after like the second or third round, I was able to meet the criteria for 2 pretty much every round. So really, almost every round of the game, you want to be getting a wonder until you get towards the end of the game and you run out of space, because placement requirements start getting a little tight. The wonders are worth like a point or two. Sometimes they give you production. They're not worth that much in the grand scheme of things. They just look cool. And some of them take up a ton of space, right? If you get the Pyramids of Giza, you're taking up like 12 blocks on the map, which is a ton of space, and they have to meet those placement requirements. So ultimately what you're doing here over and over and over again is you look at everything available. You're like, I can afford that. I'm going to buy that. I'm going to place it here because these are the three places I could put it. This one's best, I guess. And there's a little bit of a placement puzzle there, but it's not even that interesting because you are kind of limited in where things can go. And you just keep doing that over and over and over and over again until you've done it 10 rounds worth or someone maxes out population. And then you look at everything and you're like, all right, who did the best at that? Right. And so you get points for all sorts of stuff, right? Like where your population is, if you've enclosed any city blocks, all of those different wonders you've built, et cetera, et cetera. It's just dull. I found myself around round six in the first game we played, just being like, how long is this going to go? And just looking at the stacks of tiles and being like, oh, we got like four rounds left. Okay. And, you know, it's not like everything's filling up, but there's no engine to it. There's no point to any of the resources. They could be anything. This theme could have been anything. It doesn't really matter that it's a civ builder. It's just someone had a cool idea to build these wonder meeples and then just didn't do anything interesting with them. On top of which, it's a $50 game. And if you got rid of those wonder meeples and just made them more tiles, then this could have been a $30 game because there's not that much stuff in the box. I was just deeply disappointed. And I'm not surprised, I guess. Like, when you look at it and you're like, oh, okay, they're clearly going for the wow factor. And when you go for the wow factor, maybe that's covering up the lack of actual gameplay factor, right? Not always, but in this case, very much so. So this is a dodge for me. It's like the puzzle itself was interesting. I just wish it was, I don't know, a different theme or cheaper, or maybe the production actually does something, or maybe there's some kind of interaction with other players. The solo mode, there's a deck of cards, and all the deck of cards does is take things from the tableau, naturally. And like your score is basically against yourself at that point. Like you score whatever your score is and you add up what your total production is and you compare the two. So that's not particularly interesting either. There is like an extra deck of cards that adds like an extra mechanic to the game, like this kind of goal thing you're working towards, but even that's just, it just feels tacked on. Kids thought it was fine. That's a thing, right? Like it could work as a good family game. But as a parent of kids who play family games and an owner of hundreds of games, I don't want to bring out a game that bores me or annoys me in that way. This is the kind of polyomino game that I imagine when Chris and you're like, I don't like polyomino games. And then I play a game like this. I'm like, this you would hate because this is just that. This is what you have in your head.
Ooh.
It's just, I don't know. It's not a good game. And I don't get all the love for it. Other than like, look at these cool meeples. And there's a decent puzzle here. Play Tiny Towns. That's a better game. Mm-hmm. And it's like half the price. Like, go get that game. Like, it has a bunch of expansions and it's cute. Maybe it's like the disappointment that they just wasted these meeples.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll take them out of the box, and put them on the shelf. Just throw the rest out. Oof. I don't know. It's not that bad. It's not a burn. I don't hate it. If the kids wanted to play again, I would definitely play with them. Sure. There's a deep amount of disappointment here, and they could have done so much cool with this. They could have added layers to it. They could have made decisions more impactful and interesting, and they're just not interesting. And it drags on and on. So there you have it, folks. World Wonders. That's a solid dodge, a low dodge. One of my more disappointing games of the year, for sure.
Yeah, no, this was hyped up to the nth degree. And again, anytime you have a Civ game, Civ games are hot. I mean, that's, I think more than anything else, that's somewhat of the grail kind of situation, you know, because like as Euro gamers, you know, like you take a resource and you trade a resource or you move a thing on an island or a boat or a river or whatever it happens to be. But as a Euro gamer, like the ultimate form of Euro gamer kind of mechanics typically is a Civ game, right? Like. Yeah. It's multiple different actions. It's exploring, it's developing, it's building up your civilization. You get to see something physically instead of like wood becomes gold and gold becomes. Yeah. So
none of that.
No. And like you said, I mean, I think sometimes they get seduced just like we do about like really pretty meeple pieces on the board. And then it's just nothing more than that. And we've seen a number of games like that, I think, over the last year or two. Anthony, where we went to the conventions and we're like, oh, that's really cool. Can you explain the game? And like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, that is literally the lightest thing I've ever seen ever, but really cool piece is, thank you, I'll be out in the back. Like, it's just... Yeah.
It's honestly, and who knows how this was developed, but I look at this and I'm like, someone jotted down some basic math on a piece of paper. Sure. They're like, what kind of theme would this work with? I'm like, I don't know, Civ stuff? Oh my gosh, we can make giant meeples.
Yeah.
Like I feel like that's the flow here.
Shame.
There's just no economy to it.
Yeah.
Like, you're buying things and placing them that give you production, and you're not actually, you have the same amount of money every turn. It doesn't matter. And not the production doesn't do anything, and you can't lose it. So, sure. Like, what's the point of any of those mechanics? They don't do anything.
Yeah.
And maybe this is just the jaded gamer in me being like, there's a million games that use this basic idea better.
100%.
But that's what we're here for, is to review games in that context.
Yeah.
So there you go. Like I said, my kids didn't hate it.
Sure.
I'm not, they're not reviewing it. I am, but I think they would both say it's a play.
Yeah.
So again, I think it's a good family game, but it's not really how it's being pitched.
Sure.
And it's not what it costs. So,
and there's a lot of other games that fit, that are almost identical to this.
I would play Tiny Towns over this 100. And it's not even the same as Tiny Towns. It's just like, it has like that similar vibe. It scratches the itch that sure. this game thinks it's scratching. So I would just rather play that.
Yeah. That's a shame. All right. Well, Anthony, let's do it. Let's get on to our feature review. So for this week, it's Halloween. So, of course, we are trick-or-treating. Emphasis on the trick, not so much on the treat, but these trick games are treats. So, I don't know. Pun intended, I guess?
Yeah.
All right.
So, pun away, man. It's Halloween.
Yeah, there you go. So hopefully your Halloween is going well by the time you listen to this episode. I think it comes out on Halloween. So happy Halloween to everyone out there. Hopefully you're enjoying some amazing snacks, some frightful haunts, and some great costumes, and of course, some great games. So we got together a great collection, I would say in some circles, the definitive collection of trick-taking games, if I do say so myself. And we want you to have the most fun during the Halloween season. And these games, I like to say, like, more than anything else, like, if one of these games lands for you, you got a friend for life. This goes in your pocket, this goes in your car, this goes in your bag. Infinitely playable with so many different groups, and portable as all get out, because typically they're a deck of cards, more or less.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the fun thing. It is a deck of cards. It often uses suits and formats that you're familiar with.
Yes.
It, like, you can show somebody a trick-taking game, and it's not immediately 100% foreign to them.
Yeah.
Because everybody's seen a deck of cards.
Yeah, and people, I know growing up, like, I played spades, I played hearts, and this is not a far jump from any of those kind of games.
Mm-hmm.
So, Anthony, we have quite a good list. Why don't you start us off with something?
All right, top of the list is, we've got The Crew, Mission Deep Sea.
Ooh.
You could also throw in just Quest for Planet 9, but I think it's pretty much universally agreed upon now that Mission Deep Sea is the better version of this game.
I do believe the council has spoken on that, so yes.
Council has spoken, yeah. Uh-huh. So, sorry, folks. It just is what it is.
Can you redeem your Quest for Planet 9 for a Mission Deep Sea with the publisher?
No.
Oh.
No, you have to buy both.
Oh, ouch.
I know. Why?
I know.
What?
How did that production meeting go at that business? Like, hey, you know that game? It's better now. And they're like, uh-oh.
We'll sell both. You won't sell both. You'll sell one. The other one will not be sold anymore. Standalone expansion, guys, not replacements.
That's right.
Come on. We talked about this. So this is a cooperative game. You have missions that are set out. Everybody has to try to accomplish the mission. And the missions can be, I mean, it could be anything, but it could be like, you need to get the 9 triangle first and then the 7 circle second, right? And so everybody has to, like, cooperatively, quietly figure out how to do that based on the cards you have and the cards that other people might have and what people end up playing. And you just, it's a deduction game. You're trying to deduce what makes sense to play and when it makes sense to play it. And if you don't think about that, you're going to lose. The Crew is a lot of fun, and Mission Deep Sea just elevates it in a bunch of different ways. So if you want a cooperative trick-taking game, if you know trick-taking games well, or even moderately, okay, and you want something cooperative, this is the game to pick.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say that there's a better game as far as a co-op trick take. I think they kind of mastered it, especially how you can play different levels. You can kind of play to the skill level of the players at the table. which is really nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. You could play as simple as you want or super complicated, which is great. All right. Next up, we have Skull King. This is my kid's favorite trick-taking game.
Spooky.
Yeah. It's spooky skulls. Actually, it's pirates. So this is a trick-taking game in which you will bid on how many tricks you think you're going to win. Each round, you increase the number of cards in your hand. So the first round of the game, you have one card, and you bid 0 or 1, right? And it's based on almost no information. It's almost random. Unless you have, like, one of the most powerful cards, like the Skull King itself or a pirate, you're just like, I don't know. Am I going first? Okay, then I bid 0, right? But once you get up to, like, 5, 6, 7, and it goes up to 10 cards, it gets a lot more interesting because you have to, like, think about, like, okay, I have 2 pirates. That's half the pirates in the deck. What are the odds that other people have 2 pirates also? Well, less than... Again, it's like a bit of a deduction game to it. But the game throws in just enough randomness that it can get messed up, which I think in a game like this you need. So Skull King is like, it was the go-to game in my game group back in Pittsburgh for like end of the night, just goofing around, having fun, laughing. My kids really enjoy it as well. We played it while camping a couple of years ago and they fell in love. So it's probably my first or second favorite trick-taking game and definitely my most played.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I was surprised. I'm not the biggest fan of the kind of pirate theme here. And again, that kind of increasing challenge is always a little bit scary at first. But the gameplay is really nice. And I've been surprised by the number of different people who've said, hey, you want to play Skull King? I was like, you? You play Skull King? Like, I thought this was kind of like an inner circle, hardcore board game kind of thing. But no, people are picking out there in the real world.
Yeah. All right, next up we have Cat in the Box Deluxe Edition. So Cat in the Box is a game that came out originally in Japan only in 2020 from designer Munayuki Yokuchi, who has designed a bunch of trick-taking games, including Yokai Septet, which is not on our list, but I did want to shout it out because it is an amazing game. The trick with Yokai Septet is that it requires a very specific player count. You either play with 3 people or 4 people, and you really want 4 people because it's a team-based game. So it's a little harder to get to the table, but very, very good. Cat in the Box is a game in which you have kind of this paradox system where as you play tricks, you place tokens down in this board, and it makes it so certain things can't be done in the future. The cards themselves do not have colors or suits or anything. You are choosing them as you play them. So those get marked off, and eventually you have the risk of creating a paradox where nothing can be played regardless of what's in your hand. It's such a cool, interesting idea that turns trick taking kind of upside down. And honestly, it takes a couple plays with the game, even if you know the genre really well, to wrap your head around what exactly is happening. So it's really cute. It's a lot of fun. You get this awesome big eyed black cat on the cover. They had a Kickstarter recently, the Colossal Cat in the Box, which did add some new mechanics and other things and different ways to play it, yeah. And also you got a big giant cat.
That was the key point of there. A black cat, yeah. A black cat, Halloween adjacent.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a Halloween game. One of the more interesting, clever spins on trick taking that's hit the U.S.
Yeah.
There are some really weird, interesting takes on trick taking that are still Japan only, but this is one of the better ones that's made its way over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a lot of fun, and it really, that whole concept of trick taking is like your suit color or number, and like you burn that into your brain as you play the game. And this game's like, but what if that wasn't a thing? And you're like,
right.
Well, then it's not a trick-taking game. I'm like, no, it's a trick-taking game. And you're like, but is it? And it kind of is. It's got some other things yeah. to it, but it kind of is.
No, it is. Yeah. It's so different. Like it changes so much.
And it adds a lot of flexibility. So if you kind of don't like feeling stuck with the hand that you've been given, this allows some additional flexibility and tactics that goes along with the game. So you feel at least that you can kind of get a good play out, whether it's the betting element to it or the, you know, the placement on the board. It adds a lot more and it's not cumbersome at any point. And it's still a small box game.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Next up, we've got the Fox in the Forest Duet.
Ooh.
This is the other cooperative one on the list. So Fox in the Forest originally came out in 2017, and that was a 2-player trick-taking game, but it's competitive. And then in 2020, they said, why don't we make a cooperative version?
Oh.
and it's even better.
I know.
So you are playing back and forth, cooperative trick taking, just two players, two player only, and you're trying to move your foxes back and forth across this little tiny map to clear out different elements, right? So you have to go a certain amount of spaces in different directions. And so at any given point, you can see how far you need to go and where you need to go, and you kind of like silently communicate with each other to figure that out. The cards all have special powers and different suits and stuff. Very clever, very creative, very fun. And one of the better games with communication limits that I've played, where you don't feel like you need to cheat when you're talking to each other to win the game. You can legit try to figure it out just by deducing what's going on the board.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun too. And again, the artwork is outstanding. It's a small, tiny box that doesn't take up space, and it's charming as all get out. And again, mm-hmm. like the duet kind of play style as far as a co-op is concerned, small table, you know, table presence, so you can kind of fit this everywhere. And yeah, I just love it. We played this, you had it, and I bought both of them. That's how much I loved it. Yeah.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love this game. Next up, we have Diamonds. This is the Mike Fitzgerald game from, I don't know who prints it now, but it was Stronghold Games. And in the game, you have the classic suits, diamonds, hearts, clubs, and spades. And each of them represents a different action. So you can take diamonds, there's little tokens on the board, and you can put them in front of your vault, you can put them in your vault, you can steal them from other people. If they're in front of their vault, you can take them from in the vault, and in front of the vault, and put them in the vault. So it's really just like manipulating the diamonds around the table, and you're trying to get the most diamonds to win the game. So the tricks that you win are important because they let you do stuff, but ultimately you're just trying to have the most diamonds. The thing I really love about this game is every action matters. Mm-hmm. You don't have turns where like, I lost the trick. Oh, well, you still get to do something based on the suit that you played and how the game actually plays out. So I love that mechanic. I think it's really cleverly done. There is a second edition that was released in 2014, I think, that kind of refined a little bit around the game. But this is still one of my favorite trick-taking games. I think there's other ones that are more interesting in a lot of ways, but this was like the first one where I was like, oh, you can make a game like this where everybody gets to do stuff. I love this.
Now, this is a lot of fun, too. And I remember when this hit, it was big. This is Stronghold, I think, if I remember correctly, back in the day. Yep. And it's a lot of fun, too, because you have this little cardboard, you know, it's a shield, but it's supposed to be like a bank. And banking the little diamonds is just a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's the whole goal of the game, which is great. All right, next up we have Dwarf King.
Ooh.
This is Bruno Faiduti's take on trick-taking. One of his, anyways. Came out in 2011. Mm-hmm. A little bit older, and it's a fun, like, thematic take on trick taking too. Like, all the suits represent different elements of kind of this fantasy world. Like, when you deal out the cards, you're gonna have dwarves, goblins, and knights, mm-hmm. The three different suits. There's also contract tiles that are mixed in that you're trying to accomplish, and you play this over 7 rounds, so you're like engaging with the theme a lot more than you do in like a normal trick taking game, which often the trick-taking games don't really have a theme. They're just like whatever mechanic twists that they've thrown in there. This one, there's a Dwarf King and you're trying to figure out these different things. You're trying to deal with whatever problems have popped up. So basic mechanics hold true. There's no trump card or anything, but then you're trying to solve these different special cards and contracts and stuff. So you can get negative points. That's a big part of it too, based on the contracts that pop out. I've had really low scores in this game, so this is a clever one. I went out and tracked down a copy. It's been out of print for, well, I don't know if it's out of print now, but it had been for a very long time when I bought mine.
Mm-hmm.
But well worthy of tracking down if you're interested in a slightly more thematic spin on trick taking.
Yeah, I have a copy myself, and it was back in the day where they actually had those magnetic boxes, so it puts away very well, and it's got those unique size cards and great artwork. So a lot of fun.
All right. Next up, we have Ghost.
Oh,
this is from Richard Garfield.
I know that guy.
Yeah. We talked about him and his mass media empire of Fortnite by cards.
We go way back. He doesn't know. Yeah. He doesn't know it, but we go way back.
Yeah. We do actually go way back. He doesn't
That's
know.
That's right.
It. 1993. So this is, it's actually more of a ladder climbing game, which is a type of trick taking. So you have like your hand of cards. You're trying to get rid of them from your hand in your mansion by playing them out, and the cards keep going up. So it is Halloween themed. We've got ghosts and undead and vampires and zombies and all sorts of other spooky creatures and stuff. But also, they're all cute. So it's not, it's very kiddified. It's not meant to be creepy or spooky necessarily.
Yeah.
On your turn, you get to do one of three things. You get to throw cards onto the cemetery equal to higher than the card that's already there. Take all the cards from the cemetery to your hand, or draw a card from the crypt and try to play it. And if you can't, take all the cemetery cards. So you're trying to get rid of your hand effectively, which is all about trying to manage what comes in, what goes out, and what's available to place at any given time. So fairly simple in the grand scheme of like ladder climbing, reverse trick taking type of games, but works pretty well, especially with the theme.
Yeah, now this is another fun game, definitely, obviously, for Halloween. It's excellent. And
yes,
really cute, engaging artwork, too. So a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And again, magnetic box, because I love those things.
All right. Next up, we have Pococo. I love Pococo because it's so weird.
It is weird.
Such a weird game. It's from Brain Games, which you probably best know as the publisher of Ice Cool.
Yes.
And so they released this one, I think, the year or two after Ice Cool. And it's a trick-taking game in which you can't see your own cards. So you fan them out in this little array in front of you, this little peacock. And you can play cards from the player to your left, but not your own cards. But then everybody else is trying to manage their cards, trying to see what's going on. So it's got a little bit of that Hanabi element, but with trick-taking mixed in.
Yes.
And also you're kind of moving around the table a little bit. It's weird, but it works. I don't know how it works. It didn't seem like it would work, but I remember being pleasantly surprised at how fun and silly and kind of dumb this game is at the same time.
And again, we talked about a lot of these games have brilliant art presentation and mechanics. This one has the best table presence. Like, how smart, right? How smart, like, of course, peacocks, right?
Yeah.
And putting the cards out like that? Oh, brilliant, 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 brilliant.
Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah, it's perfect. Like, thematically, it works perfectly. Yes. I love
Looks
it.
Looks great, plays great. Weird, like you said, but you're in for a ride. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we have Poison, a.k.a. Friday the 13th, a.k.a. Baker's Dozen. this is Reiner Knizia's classic trick-taking game from 2005. The version I have is Friday the 13th, but they're all basically the same with different themes. And they're all kind of Halloween-ish themed, except for Baker's Dozen. So in the game, you have a hand of cards, and you're trying to play them out, and everybody discards to a central pile, but the total value of the cards in that pile matters. So if it gets higher than 13, then the players have to take the cards in the pile, then only leave their card behind. So everybody's playing out their cards, and then you try to compare how many you have in each of the three suits. Whoever has the most cards throws them away, while everyone else scores one penalty point per card. So you can shoot the moon pretty easily in this game, especially if there's a big pile there. You're like, okay, I'm just going to take all that so that I can discard all these and ultimately, you know, win. So I like this one because, you can, again, you always have something to do. Even if you have a bad hand, you could just be like, all right, forget it. I'm going for it. Right? I'm going to get all of this suit and I'm going to win. It's a cute one. This is like the other big one, along with Diamonds, that I discovered, where I was like, oh, maybe I don't hate this.
Yeah, now this is another fun one. And we played this way back in the day when it was Poison. And it was those kind of cauldron slash paper plate kind of situation. This is something very simple to play. I think your version is probably the best, just because of the sharpness and of the cards and everything as far as that's concerned. And it fits a little bit better with the theme. But yeah, a great introductory trick-taking game.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, next up we have Haggis.
Oh,
this game had been out of print for like 10 years, but they did just run a Kickstarter, Portland Game Collective, like last month, and it's now coming back into print. So I feel comfortable talking about it. You can also play it on Board Game Arena. So if you're interested in playing it online, it is available there. I played this a bunch during COVID with my friends. Back in Pittsburgh, while we were all stuck in our houses. So it's a climbing game. You have a lot of different elements. You have different card combinations you can play out to kind of escalate. You're always trying to go higher, but you can have different combos and sets and runs to play higher. Mm-hmm. There's also bombs that you can play, which is like a certain combination of cards that will kind of take out whatever's out there, and you're scoring for the cards in hand. So it's interesting and unique and takes a lot of thinking and trying to like wrap your head around what you're doing in the game. And it was always one of those really clever spins on the genre that I really appreciated. But again, it was like, I could only play it online. So I'm happy that I will now be able to get a real life physical copy of this game, even if I like the old artwork better. Yeah, Haggis.
Yeah, surprising. And again, we were just talking about this, what, week or two back?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad I can. I don't think I'd feel comfortable mentioning it if it hadn't been on Kickstarter, because I'm like, you can't get this game. Don't even.
This is an awesome thing that you cannot have. Ha ha ha. No,
right. Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah. And just for the record, it only plays two or three players. So it's not, you can't play a four player game here. It has very specific player counts.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we have For Northwood, a solo trick taking game. I had to throw this in there because it is a trick taking game, but it is purely solo. There is not even a two player mode here. I reviewed this a few weeks ago, and it is a hand management game where you're trying to kind of match basically what you're going up against in a given scenario. There's 16 scenarios or challenges in the game, and you're trying to match them and make sure you manage the cards as they come out in the order in which you play your tricks. So you're playing against, I don't want to say AI because it's all like in front of you what's happening, but it's effectively a trick-taking puzzle that they've managed to create based on this print-and-play game, The Emissary, from the designer Wilhelm Tzu. Great, great solo game. Great, great trick-taking game. Like, if you like those two things, you should definitely check this out. It's relatively inexpensive, like $20. It's available on Amazon. Recommend checking it out.
Yeah, no, another great game, and also a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we have Niet.
What?
Niet.
Aww. This was going so well.
So designed by Stefan Dora, this is from 1997. So another like classic trick taker from a well-known designer. And in this game, you have this grid of options, right? So players will take turns crossing them out based on the hands cards that they have in their hand, right? So they'll get rid of certain choices for starting player or trumps or super trumps or the number of cards you have to discard, the value of the tricks on the grid. And based on like where you end up, that's the value of the particular hand that you have, right? So you have a say, but it might not go the direction you want based on what's going on. So you know what your cards are before you vote. And then you just play a standard trick-taking hand. That opening round is always the most interesting, and people be like, you know, trying to mess with each other and get them to go in a different direction. It's just a fun, clever layer on top of, you know, a already fun basic mechanic. This was one of those ones, like I mentioned, not wanting to mention Haggis. If it was out of print, this was out of print. So I do feel bad. It's super hard to find. You can get German copies for pretty cheap, but getting an actual the yellow English copy mm-hmm. is pretty hard to find at this point.
This was the polar bear on the cover, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Russian polar bear. and I don't, that's certainly not coming back anytime soon, but it'd be nice if we could get like a rethemed version of this.
Okay.
All right, and then last but not least, we have what I think is probably my favorite trick-taking game, Texas Showdown, also known as Seas of Strife, been re-released as that recently. And in the game, you're trying to avoid taking tricks. Like, you want to get rid of your cards, don't take any tricks. The fewer tricks you take, the better you do. The cards escalate in your hand, so you have, the suits are based on the number, so like 1 through 9 is a suit, and 10 through 18 is a suit, and 20 through whatever is a suit, all the way up to like 55. And as you play cards, you're trying to make sure other people take that trick. So you have to be tricky in terms of how you get rid of your cards, because you don't want to necessarily place out a really high number if nobody else has something that can beat it, or if you know that they have something else they could play instead. So it's if you have like one of the top four cards, which is all the same suit, and you're the first one to play yours, then you know someone else has to play theirs because they have to follow suit, and then maybe they will win that trick. So you have to think about it a lot in terms of how you're balancing that. So it's almost like the bidding type approach, but without any of the bidding, which I thought was a lot of fun. So This is one of my favorites. I've held on to this one. Highly recommend it if you can find a copy, because I think both of these are out of print now, but I think they'll also bring it back because it's come back a couple of times over the years. And it does play a pretty wide player range, 3-6.
Excellent. Well, there you go, everybody. Our expansive list of holiday treats. They're trick-taking games for your holiday season. Happy Halloween, everybody. Enjoy these games. Get them to the table. Whether you're a hardcore Euro player, 18XX, as Anthony said, plays all his games, loves trick-taking games, and there's a great list for you to get to the table with the family, with the friends, and especially the trick-or-treaters who come to your door. Because give them games.
Yeah.
You got games. Come on. You got enough games. Just give some games out. Especially the trick-taking games. I think that's funny, too.
Yeah, yeah. Just a handful of card
balls. Yeah, it's like trick-or-treat. And they're like, trick? Like, ha ha! It's like an Uno thing. Yes, here's a trick-taking game, so don't mess with my house.
They're like, ha ha ha, old man, give me the... Still gonna egg your house. Damn it. Now.
Well, until they egg my house, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.